Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Good Radio Network, radio that does a world of good. This isn't your average talk radio show.
Blah, 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 blah.
We're blasting away the old tried and not so true mold. Instead, TGRN turns talk into action. And action leads to doing positive things for people, our environment, and even the animals.
Well, I'm only one person. What can I do?
A lot. Join host Frankie Picasso while she turns talk into doing and gets results. This is the Good Radio Network. Yes, you can do it if you try, even if you're just a regular guy. Now, here's your host, Frankie Picasso.
Good day and welcome to the Good Radio Network. I am your host, Frankie Picasso, and as always, it's so great to be here with you today. I am waiting for my guest, Leon Logothetis, to call in, and if he can hear me, maybe press the number 1 so that I can see you in the host queue and can bring you on with me. The sun is finally shining in my part of the world, and I hope that we find you well wherever you are listening from. We have a great show for you today as soon as Leon joins me, and I'm very excited for you to meet him. But first, a few updates in a good minute. Our friends at An Active Dog are looking for a patron or someone to pay for studio space as they restore some of the paintings that you might remember were damaged in the snowstorm in Louisville this past winter. The space needs to be large enough to allow Mark to work on 8x8-foot paintings. PBS is still filming them, and I do hope to see their documentary. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely amazing. Mark Marone has been seeking seriously for the past 4 years to complete 5,500 portraits of actual, healthy dogs that were killed within 72 hours of being in the shelter. Every day, 5,500 dogs are killed in shelters across the United States, and this visual representation is going to be phenomenal. And when An Active Dog gets their museum of compassion finally built, it will house 2 football fields of artwork. So please give generously. Go to www.anactofdog.org. They don't want to take any money from the charity to live on. They need your support. Please go to their page. They have awesome nightlights featuring some of the dogs that Mark has painted in a larger format, as well as collage of many of the dogs. I hope that you will support them. Thanks so much for that. I can hear that Leon is with me now. So today, I'm just going to say on the Good Radio Network, we are going to chat about kindness. And what do you think about kindness? Do you think that kindness exists in today's world? I do know there's a whole whack of people out there who think it does not. It's gone like the dodo bird. But I know something that they don't know. I know for a fact that it does exist. And so does my guest, Leon Logothetis. Leon's an author, philanthropist, adventurer, motivational speaker, and dare I say middle child, and that alone explains what comes next. Leon decided to set out across the globe in the only way he knew how, upping the stakes, making things as difficult as possible for himself, and then making a grand adventure out of it. While riding a bright yellow motorcycle dubbed Kindness One, he managed to ride his bike across the USA, travel by boat to Europe, hit up India, Thailand, and Cambodia along the way, grab an airplane ride for himself and his bike, take another boat back to Canada, ride his way back home to Los Angeles, and every step of the journey was fueled by kindness of strangers. That's right. He took no money with him. He accepted no money. And after, he wrote a book called The Kindness Diaries, based on his journey to find kindness in the world and delivering a boatload of it back to some unsuspecting Good Samaritans that he met along the way. Leon's a former stockbroker who hails from London, England originally. I believe he still adopted L.A. as his home. And to date, he has visited more than 90 countries, traveled to every continent. He's the host of TV series Amazing Adventures of a Nobody, which is broadcast across the world by National Geographic International. And over the course of 3 seasons, viewers watched him as he crossed America, the U.K., and Europe on $5, £5, and €5 a day, respectively. Today, he is the founder of the Human Interaction Project, and I am so pleased to welcome him to the show. Hello, Leon. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure. I just couldn't wait to meet this crazy adventurer.
Oh, that's funny. Yes, we meet. We meet.
I have a middle child. I have a middle child who totally walks to a different drummer. In fact, he just walked 850 kilometers across Spain on the Camino de Santiago. And I can tell you that it was a life-altering journey for him. He was 26 years old, and he did it on $25 a day. And not like you, you know, on zero. But still, you know, not bad. Not bad for a first journey to Europe by himself and totally get this middle child. Totally get you.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty impressive. And middle child, children unite, I say.
Yeah, well, you know, he landed in Madrid and didn't know where he was going after that. Didn't make a plan, so. kind of reminds me of you. You said that you were inspired by the Motorcycle Diaries, the movie made about Cher Gouveia. What was it about that movie that inspired you to take off?
Well, at that time I was working in a brokerage firm in London, and very disconnected, very uninspired. And the movie, which is a romanticized version of Che traveling across South America relying on kindness, just kind of touched a raw nerve, really. It was a very inspiring story about someone who was going out to live their life in a fuller way as possible. Of course, it was a romanticized version, but it was something about that movie that touched my heart.
Had you thought about kindness before that? The idea of it? Giving it?
That's a great question. I've never actually been asked that. I mean, I guess it was inside me, but I had never really thought too much about it. And that movie kind of just put it right in front of my face, and kind of it seeped into my soul.
Well, you know, I read your book, The Kindness Diaries, and you know, I perceive that freedom has to be your number one value.
Definitely.
God help you.
But freedom along with compassion, because there's no point in... I guess you can't really have freedom unless you have that compassion, that empathy for others and yourself.
Right. And you know, mention your girlfriend, Lena. Is she still your girlfriend? Or is she a wife yet?
that's a good question. Unfortunately... the traveling life sometimes takes its toll. So
It does. And, you know, as I was reading that the whole time, I kept thinking, well, why couldn't she go with him? My husband and I did once on trips across the United States. And you know, I love it. I love not knowing what's coming next. Like, I love that. And meeting this, you know, amazing characters. And I thought, well, how come you have to go alone and meet these people?
That's true. That's what she was saying.
And what's your answer to that? Why did you have to go alone?
Another really good question. I've never been asked that. I guess I just... sometimes you need time to yourself. You know, you need to go out on the road. As Joseph Campbell said, you know, the hero's journey. You need to go out and find yourself. And sometimes the only way to do that is by yourself.
Well, I loved that you started your journey in Los Angeles and you traveled a couple of blocks and it's just about stopped before it got started. Because no one was offered to buy you a tank of gas. So telling.
It did. But you know, ultimately, I think ultimately there's no expectation for people to be kind, in the sense that there's no expectation. Who am I? You know, I'm just going to come up to you on the street and all of a sudden you're going to drop everything and be kind to me. I mean, that isn't really how it works, the way I found it. But ultimately, you find that one person. And once you find that one person that you can connect with, then the magic appears.
Well, it seemed to me that you had to travel a lot on determination, and a lot counted on miracles for you. And it was interesting that you got to see miracles happen and recognize them.
Absolutely. I mean, some of the things that happened truly were miraculous. For example, the homeless chap that I stayed with, well, I slept on the streets with him in Pittsburgh, and the level of kindness that he showed, and it was just astonishing. And then I was honored to be able to help him, and he helped me. And some of the things that happened, like, for example, traveling across the oceans for free. You know, if you wake up in the morning and think, oh, I'm going to travel the oceans for free, it's going to be like, no, you're not. But if you keep going,
right,
ultimately something will happen. If you put your mind to it, whatever we put our mind to.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I want to talk about Tony for a minute, because he is an incredible man. And I love that this homeless person, you know, this homeless man who would have, you know, you could stay at my house if I had one, actually gave you more clothes, you know, clothes that he had just received because he was worried about you not having enough.
Yeah.
Where does
that come from?
You know, who is he?
I was in Pittsburgh and I was looking for a place to stay, and I couldn't find one. Again, there's no expectations. And ended up chatting with this chap in the park, and it turned out to be Tony, and he turned out to be homeless. And he said to me, "Look, I'm homeless, but if you want, you can stay with me tonight. I'll protect you. I'll feed you." And he ended up giving me some clothes, and he was the kindest man, one of the kindest men I'd ever met, in the sense that here was a man who had nothing and gave everything of himself. And I've met many penniless millionaires before, and here was a chap who was the richest man I'd ever met. And I ended up staying the night. He ended up protecting me, as he said he would. Something happened, as you see in the first paragraph of the book. And you know, the next morning I was honored enough to be able to repay his kindness and his faith by sending him back to school and putting him up in an apartment.
So
you know, well, you know, it would be wonderful if everything ended in a Disney way, but you can't you know, just leave the streets and expect everything to be hunky dory. So there are ups and there are downs for Tony. I said I'd stand by him, and I have done that. And if he keeps going, he will find his dreams. But it's not so simple, because it's not just a physical thing when you're homeless. It's more so an emotional, internal thing.
Well, you met some very interesting characters along the way, and I couldn't help thinking that Filippo, from Italy, that he kind of seemed like an angel, like a real angel to me. Like, you know, stepped into this fatherly, godly role, told you some wonderful things, and sent you off on your way.
Yes, he was,
other
actually.
Characters that reminded me of that. Like, there were step-ins.
Yeah, Filippo was like that. And it's funny, when you're on the road, again, I did it by myself, and sometimes you meet these angel characters who you get into their lives for, I don't know, 12 hours, 24 hours, whatever it may be, and they bring something to the table that you never forget. And Filippo, yes, he did have that fatherly type of energy, and it was something that I needed, because at that moment I was having my moments, let's put it that way.
Yeah. And did you recognize it, though, then? Did you think, oh, I wonder if this is like an angel? Like, did it ever cross your mind?
Do you know, in the moment, I would say I was so, like, focused on kind of getting from A to B and finding places to stay, that sometimes it passed me by. Not all the time, but sometimes. But now, when I look back at it, it's crystal clear.
Right, yeah. Amazing. And, you know, people kept telling you, oh, I wish I could do that. I wish I could do that. And I just wanted to reach into that book and say, you can do it. And you said it. You can do it. And you were doing it for, you know, on $0. What was stopping anybody else except the belief that they could? Just like everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've been inspired in my life by some, you know, historical figures, Winston Churchill, Neil Armstrong. Neil Armstrong walked on the moon, and I always say to myself, if Neil Armstrong could walk on the moon, of course he didn't do it by himself, he had, you know, a lot of help, but if Neil Armstrong can walk on the moon, then what's stopping me from doing what I want to do? And if there's nothing stopping me from doing what I want to do, then there's nothing stopping you. And if there is something stopping you, then it's our responsibility to find a way through that, not to sit down and say, okay, well, there's a barrier in front of me, so I'm just going to go home.
Right. Yeah, so so Dwight was really the guy who got you started on your journey. He came down the street at the right time in Los Angeles and said, hey, man, like, that's pretty cool. Yeah, sure, I'll buy you some gas. And away you go.
That's it, good old Dwight. He began it all.
Off on the trip. Yeah, he began it all. I just love Dwight. He was so cool. You see, he looked like Jamie Foxx. I can just see. And then you ran into Willie and Sherry, which is a lovely story. So you find a Scotsman in Colorado driving a British
yes.
taxi cab. Now, did he own the taxi cab or was he driving it?
No, the taxi cab was actually randomly at some dealer. He wasn't a car dealer. He wasn't. It had nothing to do with Willie. It was what inspired me to stop in that town.
Okay, gotcha.
So it was serendipity.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. So you met this beautiful couple who Willie was helping people. Did he run a suicide hotline, or he worked for a suicide hotline and just helped everybody, and this beautiful little older woman.
Okay.
And I loved her. She was great. She was great. And I really liked her. And because, you know, my dad was just here, and he's 90 years old, and he just went off on another world trip. And God bless him. And, yeah, amazing. And his wife is half his age. And, you know, when you see those people and you have to look at them and you say, what still inspires you in life? Like, how is it that, you know, most people give up at 50 and yet you're excited, even though you've done it 10 times, you're still excited to go out into that world and meet new people and connect and see it all again. Like, what's the magic?
I think it's the sense of adventure. I think it's the sense of connecting with people. I think it's a sense of just wanting to make the most of our time, you know, on this little planet of ours. And if you go out and... It's also about getting out of your comfort zone, I think. I know for myself, when I'm at home in LA and I'm sitting there and I'm spending my time in a routine, I'm not fully alive. I'm actually in St. Petersburg right now, so in Russia.
Great.
So yeah, I actually walked out of the ballet, to be honest with you, in order to be on this call.
Oh,
so
no.
Yeah, no, it's okay, don't worry. But my point is that, you know, when you go out and you experience the world, you become I become a better human being. And
right.
My aim with what I learn from life is to go out and touch people's lives in a positive way. You know, I'm very fortunate in the sense that I can travel. I'm very fortunate in the sense that I can go out and do the things that I do. So with that, I try my hardest to be able to give back if I can. And if I can be inspiring in some way, that's great.
Don't you think it's kind of, in some way, easier to connect with people who don't speak your language because you really have to focus on them? You have to give them 100% of your full attention.
It is very true. And sometimes it is. And sometimes it's an icebreaker. Like when you talk to someone who doesn't speak the same language as you and you show them their culture in a respectful fashion, it's an icebreaker. And I sometimes think that we don't connect with people because we don't know kind of like how to break the ice. Like, what am I going to say to them? What about if they think badly of me or this and that? But if you find an icebreaker, that's the way in. Like, whenever I travel, one of the first things I do when I speak to people is I ask them if they like football, because I'm a big football fan, like a soccer fan. And the moment they tell me yes, that's it. We're friends. If they say no,
right.
I'll find something else.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay. There you go. And so your first jog of your journey was that you had to get to New York City because there was a boat waiting for you, a free boat, cargo.
Yes.
Because you
yes.
and Kindness One across the ocean. And we should mention that Kindness One wasn't a brand new bike. It was a lemon, right?
Yes, it's definitely a lemon, definitely.
Where is she today?
In my garage.
Oh, good.
Waiting patiently to break down again.
Yeah. I was in a really bad motorcycle accident, and I like to joke that my bike is inside me now. I had so much metal in me that they put my bike back inside me. That's great. So you managed to get across the ocean and land in Spain and head off from there. And who was the next person that you met? Was it Tasso? Hercules?
No, Hercules. Hercules, yes. He's a Spanish chap in Barcelona who put me up for the night, and his name really was Hercules. So I wasn't going to argue with him when he offered me a place to stay. I was like, okay. Yes, Hercules.
How many people were afraid of you, do you think?
Look, you know,
I mean,
I'd say...
Today strangers are scary, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, 10 people I would go up to, 9 of them would say no.
Right.
Whether that was because they were afraid of me or they were busy or whatever. So it's not like everyone that I met was like, oh, yes, I want to help you. That didn't
right.
happen that way. It really didn't. So there were good things that happened, and there were moments where I wished I wasn't on the journey. I was like, why am I doing this to myself? And then I realized that, in fact, it was me who did this to myself, and that the only one to blame is me, and I stopped complaining.
So why did you do it? Why did you make it so difficult? Is it good?
I guess I made it difficult because... This is going to be a slightly exaggerated answer to your question, but again, going back to Winston Churchill, one of his famous quotes, and he had many, was when you are walking through hell, keep walking. And by that, I guess what he meant was when you have challenges in front of you, just keep walking through them, because by the end of that challenge, if you walk through it, you'll come out a better human being. Just don't give up. So, and that was another one of his famous quotes, actually, never, never give up. So it's kind of just putting myself in difficult situations in order to learn as much as I can about the world, as much as I can about myself, and use that as to make some positive change.
You must love Douglas Bader.
I've never heard of Douglas who?
Bader.
Oh, I don't know
him. Fighter pilot, the British fighter pilot.
Oh, no, I'll Google him.
Oh, you haven't heard him? Oh, okay, so Bader was a fighter pilot in World War II, and he lost both of his legs, and he went through therapy, and he actually got back as a squadron leader and was one of the highest. Like, he was like an ace in the skies, and he bombed more Germans than anybody else. He's awesome story.
But you see, that's another example of someone saying, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to allow my circumstances to put me in a box. I'm going to go out there and make the most of it.
Yeah, and his squadron didn't respect him, and they came in and they go, like, what can you do? You don't have legs. And then he didn't say anything. He just got himself in a plane and did some maneuvers, and they're like, oh, my God, their jaws dropped. And they said, yeah, this guy can fly. So that's all it takes. You know, doing things.
It's a powerful story.
No, I have to say, yeah, it's a great story. When you were in Nebraska and you met those cowboys, oh, my God, you had me giggling. I just loved it. And you go, can I? Yeah, do you have any cowboy shoes?
Do I have cowboy shoes?
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant.
It's so funny. No, I don't, still.
You're a funny guy. But, you know, I just have to say that the gift that you left. Now, being a philanthropist, I mean, I like to say I'm a philanthropist in training because I don't have a lot to give. I don't have as much to give as I would like to give. But if I did, it'd be amazing. And I just love the gifts that you were able to leave behind. And, you know, money isn't really something I worry about too much because I always think it's going to come back to you. But it must be so joyful to be able to really connect and think, oh, I just know the perfect thing for this person.
Absolutely. That was the main thing of the journey was, to me, was giving back. Some of the experiences that I had, the looks on people's faces when I was able to offer them something, and they had no idea what I was going to do. I mean, they had no idea that their act of kindness could end up with them getting something. So it was beautiful. It was a beautiful thing. Beautiful moments. Many, many beautiful moments.
I'm just going to give out our phone number here in case anybody's listening and you want to call in and speak to Leon. It's 845-241-9943. 845-241-9943, and hit 1 on your dial pad so I can see you in the host queue. Your family was in the stockbroker business. Is that Is that how you made your money?
Yes, my family was in the financial world in England, and other things they were doing.
Okay, and so did you make have this money before you went to America, or was this something that because of the TV show?
Yes, I did, and then I left the business and I set up a production company. And for TV shows, and I started doing these writings and stuff. And I always say, look, I was very fortunate, and I had the means to go out and do the things that I do. And some people don't have that. And I understand it's a taller mountain to climb when you don't. Let's put it that way.
So possibly, you know, if I was to analyze you a little bit. The fact that you made it so difficult was maybe because people could not say to you then, well, you have money, Leon. Anybody can do it with money. That was my dad's favorite saying to me. He goes, anybody can do it with money. How can you do it without? And he challenged me all the time because he had money. And I love the creativity and the level of creativity that comes with not having money or not being able to use your money. Like, you had to get creative.
I most certainly did have to get creative. I think there's an element of truth to that. Definitely, I did put myself in a situation that was outside of my own comfort zone, let's say, and my own paradigm. And I guess I did do that to kind of see whether I could make it in a different setting than I was used to.
Well, you certainly have.
But one more thing I would like to say, actually, about the money thing is, you know, there are many, many people out there that do have money that don't do anything.
Right.
You know? So it's and there are many people that don't have money and do a lot. So it kind of depends on what's inside you and what is driving you.
But I just wondered if perhaps, you know, unbeknownst to you, you do some things so that people, you know, wouldn't go on back to you and go, well, yeah, it's easy for you. You have money. You know, so you say,
yes,
hey, you
yes.
know what? No, I did it without money. So there, you know, anybody can do
it. Yeah, I'm sure there was an element of that.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, I love it. You had some amazing adventures. You went to India and you met a beautiful family there, and he was a rickshaw driver. Tell us about
Yeah, I went to India, and I ended up meeting this chap that was a rickshaw driver. That he took me to the slums of India, where he lived. He put me up in his home. He introduced me to his family. He fed me, and he actually rented his rickshaw. And there were times when he wouldn't make enough money to cover his payments, and there were times when he wouldn't make enough money to feed his kids. And he was telling me this. And the next morning, I again had the honor of being able to repay his faith and repay his kindness by buying him a rickshaw. So, in fact, now he's driving the streets. I'm actually going to see him again in October. He's driving the streets of Delhi in his own rickshaw. So all the money he makes, he uses for his family, and he doesn't have to pay any rent or anything. It belongs to him.
How amazing is that? You know, it's incredible how blessed we are to live over here. And maybe, you know, folks in different countries feel just as blessed, like the gentleman that you bought the cow for. But we have so much, and they have so little. And just the fact that you could buy him a rickshaw and put him into business and make all the difference, you know, for his family surviving, as opposed to paying, you know, huge amounts. I think it was like he rented that rickshaw, and he made $800, and he had to pay $500 to the owner. So that's like, you know, you're working for nothing, and you can't support a family on that.
It was actually 800 rupees, which at the time is about $8. So the chap was living on like $3 to $5.
A whole family.
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible, isn't it? And when you see that, and then you see the Taj Mahal, it's got to be mind-blowing, the disparity.
It totally is. It totally is. And there's certain sections in in New Delhi and all over India, where you have a very, very high concentration of wealthy, very wealthy people. And right next door, you've got literally people with no shoes. It's quite
prevalent was that caste
difficult.
System? Did you feel it? Does it still exist?
Very much so. Very much so. Mm-hmm. I mean, very much so. Very much so. You've got it's pretty. I don't know if you've never been to India, it's a place to go to because it's an eye opener.
So it's racism on a different scale. It's almost like civil racism or something. I don't know how to put it.
Yeah. It's just the poverty is just excruciating there.
And you took a dip in the Ganges. Wow.
I did, and I survived.
And you survived. Do you have the T-shirt?
I don't have the T-shirt, but the Ganges, as you know, is one of the holiest rivers in the world, and it is the holiest river for Hindus. And it's very, very dirty, but they feel very close to it, and they're always bathing in it and all this kind of stuff. And for an Indian, it's okay because their kind of immune system has been built up. But for a Westerner to go into the Ganges and, you know, accidentally drink some of the water, it's not going to be a very pleasant end.
Yeah, I guess not. And then you made your way to Calcutta and visited Mother Teresa, the site where she was buried. What was that?
Yes, I did. That was very moving, to be honest with you. You know, you just feel her spirit, and you feel all the goodness that she did, and it was just very, very moving, very moving.
She was a very incredible person. And so beautiful in her youth. So beautiful.
Yeah,
it's amazing. Yeah. Wow. But it's good that in her orphanage and the work that she did, there's still sisters there doing that.
Yeah, I mean, think about the lives that she's touched in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many. Just through the simple act of loving. The simple act of loving.
Right.
Sometimes not so simple, but if you can perfect it like she did, then you're on the
One of my favorite quotes of hers is, you know, because people come to me and they're depressed, and Mother Teresa said, well, you can't walk fast and be depressed. So I always say, just go out and walk around real quick.
That's a brilliant quote. She said that?
Yeah, she said that.
Oh, great. I love that. Can't walk fast and be depressed. Next time I get depressed, I'm just going to start walking fast.
Yeah. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
So there was a city on your journey that you kind of went out of the way to get to. Is it called Bhutan? Is that correct?
Bhutan in northeast of India. It's a place that has the thing called gross national happiness.
I love that.
They determine the happiness of a country, the success of a country, based on the happiness of the people, and not how much money you make.
Wouldn't that be great if every corporation did that?
It would be. They'd all go probably bankrupt, but they would be.
I don't think they would, though. You know, I don't. I think that because, you know, I did a little bit of work in that area, and I think that if your employees are happy, then their production is up.
Yeah, that is very true. An unhappy worker is not going to be of service.
And so what made these people happy? Like, were they born into happiness? Like, how did they manage to pull it off when the rest of the world can't?
You know, I don't know the algorithm that they use to make this, but I tell you, everyone should go to Bhutan at least once. One of the things that I did pay for on my journeys was my visas. I had to pay for all the visas, obviously, because if I arrived in Turkey at the border and said, can I come into your country for free, that probably wouldn't have gone down well. So I had to pay for my visa in Bhutan, but there's a joy in these people that I personally felt just was so powerful. Does it mean that everyone was happy? Does it mean that they've never done bad things? No, of course not. We're all human beings. We're not perfect. But there was a sense of joy that was truly extraordinary.
And I think it was, did you talk to one of the ministers? Is that who you talked to?
Yes, I did. The Minister of Environment such a lovely man, such a wise man, the Minister of the Environment. I can't remember his name, but he was such a good man.
Yeah. I don't know why. It just hit me that here was another little angel on your journey, because he did seem to really...
He was definitely an angel, definitely. Good man.
So you had an interesting time in Thailand and getting Kindness One into Cambodia, I think it was.
Oh, golly. Did you have to remind me of that? I was happy.
You were happy? Still
yes.
Happy again. Back.
Yes, and another thing actually that I had to pay for was the bike needed a passport. So before I left America, I had to pay for the bike's passport. And for some reason, in Thailand, Cambodia, and Vietnam, they didn't like the bike's passport, and that meant they didn't like the bike. And that kind of meant they didn't like me. And it was a real struggle to get the bike through those three countries.
I felt your pain. I did. I felt that frustration of, you know, if it's not new and you can't carry it, so you can't bring it in.
I know.
How ridiculous
it's like,
is that?
It's not, okay, give me 20 Vietnamese and I can carry it.
Right, yeah. And then they say, okay, now you can bring it in, but you can't ride it.
Exactly. But by that time, I was so happy just to get the bike in. I was like, I don't worry about it. I'm not going to ride it. Just let me out of this country, please. Even though Vietnam is a beautiful country, spending your days in a border crossing is not so much fun.
Yeah. What a shame, though, because it really does depend on the individual that's there, doesn't it? I mean, you know, some people are nice, some people aren't nice, and you happen to get some people that weren't so nice. But you did have, an interesting... time there, and you did a wonderful thing. You met Sang, and you built her a house. Sophia introduced you to her, right? A woman who had AIDS and a son.
Yes. That was a very moving
God
moment.
And did you have any concept of how much time she had left?
No. Although she was one of the people that I was able to help, so I ended up helping her with a house, because she had like this shack that always used to get wet when it was raining.
Pretty sad. And in Ho Chi Minh City, you met a girl. Was her name Van or Vin?
Vin, yes. I met her, and I ended up chatting with a doctor who gave free eyesight surgery to poor rural Vietnamese, and that was a pretty powerful thing.
I imagine. Yeah. You know, one of our core projects here on the Good Radio Network is Mercy Ship, and they're in Mozambique right now delivering free health care to the world's poorest poor, and they deliver... all kinds of surgery. But one surgery that I pay for them as an artist, I'm an artist, and when somebody commissions a painting, $250. And I think it's like just the easiest and quickest 45-minute surgery, and somebody's life is totally changed for the rest of their life. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
They're
it's amazing.
Community
something
and,
so
and,
simple.
Yeah, and these guys had cataracts, right?
Cataracts that can be fixed so simply here and can be fixed simply there. But if you don't have the money, then you're going to go blind. And that's just not okay.
And Dr. Nguyen, he was trained in England, was he? Or someplace north?
Yes. He studied in England.
He studied in England. So you had some things in common you could talk about?
We did. We talked about Englishness.
Englishness?
The Englishness. Whatever that means.
Yeah. And I have to say that I loved how when you were in Canada and everybody told you to go see the Rockies and you were freezing, because I live in Canada, and I know I don't live in the Rockies, but I know it can get very cold here on a motorcycle. But that was great. You went to see Lena's grandmother.
I did.
And her friends.
Lee and his
grandmother. And they set you up with a warm winter jacket and sent you on your way.
Even with warm winter jacket, it was freezing. So you can imagine what it was like without a warm winter jacket. I was like, it was really, really cold.
It is cold. Yeah, it's too cold. I mean, you know, my husband said he doesn't ride under 12 Celsius. Like, once he gets to 12.
Well, he's a wise man. He's wiser than me. That's
well,
for sure.
Because, you know, it's going to go down quite a bit as you're on your bike, right? Obviously.
Yeah, it was just so freezing. I've never been so cold, literally. I mean, sure, there are colder places, but when you're on a vintage yellow motorbike and you've just done like 20,000 miles or however many miles, you just want to go home.
But you made it to Whistler, which is the chapter in your book that made me cry. The only one. I always cry at doggy stories. And Whistler is like one of my most favorite places of all. And I've had some wonderful experiences there. And met a woman. I can't remember how you met her now, but she volunteered at a shelter, at an animal shelter.
Yes.
And she took you over
there. She did. She did indeed. It was, I think dogs are cats as well, but primarily for me, dogs. They were a beautiful companion. And when I see them suffering, it touches a place in my heart that is very deep.
Yeah, I don't know how much at the beginning of the show that you caught because you were trying to get on, but one of our other partners, an active dog, you know, Marcus painted 5,500 portraits of dogs that were killed daily. I'd say 100 were killed every day. And he's done a tribute to these dogs, real actual dogs that died while in a shelter.
Yeah.
Some of these pets.
I heard that.
It's horrible. And I'm so happy
that you were able
to get to the shelter and give the dogs, you know, would you get some beds and toys and food?
Yep.
I was following my iPad.
It was a moving moment. One thing I actually do have to say about traveling, which is kind of pertinent to this, to what's happening right now, is that my phone is about to die.
Oh, no. Okay.
I don't want a situation where all of a sudden I disappear. I'm in the middle of a park in St. Petersburg, and the beauties of technology, we all know what they are, and we also know that when you forget to bring your charger, things turn bad. So the situation may arise where the phone dies, and if that happens, so sorry.
Not to worry, and let's give out some pertinent information that people can find you and reach you, and especially if you're... With the HIP program, is the age is 18 to 30? Is that
Yes, the Human Interaction Project. And people can basically have the opportunity to do what I did, which is travel the world and come home and share what they've learned with people and change someone's life. There's a provision in the charity whereby when you find someone whose life you feel that you can change, we will give you that opportunity.
Isn't that amazing? Wow. I love that. I love that whole thing. And so people can go to humaninteractionproject.com or .org?
Humaninteractionproject.org.
.org. And see that. And for the motorcycle diaries, they can go to, or the kindness diaries, they can go to find you
at the Amazon, just put the kindness diaries in, or you can go to my site. And my name is a bit of a challenge, but it's the site is Leon and then LOGOTHETIS.com. So LeonLogothetis.com. Nice and Greek.
Very Greek. Very nice. How did the Greeks treat you when you were there?
Very well. The Greeks have a way of, being very generous and very kind and very positive with their guests. So I was treated excellently.
How do you feel about their situation right now? What do you think is going to happen?
I think it's a tragedy. And it's terrible to see so much suffering. It really is. I'm not going to get political. Sorry, say it again.
No, I was just wondering, because, you know, people want to travel. Like, are you feeling, you know, the difference as you travel now around Europe?
The difference in what sense?
Yeah,
I'm in Russia now.
Yeah, the monetary sense. Like, did people feel like things are going to collapse?
Not really. I mean, I know that in Greece, obviously, right now things are very bad, and you can only take 60 euros out of your bank every day. So that's not good at all. But in the rest of Europe, you don't really feel it, to be honest with you. And I haven't been to Greece this summer, so I haven't been affected by it as it stands.
Leon, I know that you have to go and you're running out of time here, but one last thing. What's next on your agenda? What are we going to hear about you?
Oh, what are you going to hear about me? Hopefully good things. no, I'm doing a journey where I'm traveling across America on $0 a day starting in October, because the paperback edition of the book is coming out. So I'm doing that on $0 a day, and basically doing what I did without Kindness One and giving back again. So I'm doing like an American version of this just in America on $0 a day. So if you see a bald Englishman asking for help, please help.
Are you walking?
I'm hitchhiking.
You're hitchhiking? Oh, that doesn't sound
yeah.
Good. Okay. As a mom, I'm going to say, no, don't do it.
Yeah, you're probably right. It probably doesn't sound safe, but sometimes you've got to do what you've got to do. And it'll all work itself out. With a bit of intuition, anything is possible.
There you go. Okay, pick him up if you see him on the side of the road. You'll recognize him. Leon, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and I'm so sorry that my phone's about to die.
No worries. I hope you'll stay in touch. Take care, and have yourself a wonderful day.
Okay, thanks so much.
Bye now.
You too. Bye.
And bye-bye. And wherever you are in the world, I thank you for joining us today and being inspired by Leon Logothetis' journey around the world on nothing but kindness. The kindness of strangers supported him. I thank you for joining us, and if you haven't, weren't able to meet the live version of the show, sorry about the ramble, then perhaps you'll download the show and share it with your friends. You take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. This has been the Good Radio Network with the Princess of Positivity, Frankie Picasso. Are you ready to walk the talk, turn talk into doing? Then get out there and do a world of good. You've got the power.